Hello, and we'll get right into the events of the week. Dialogue Conspiracy, for those of you who are not familiar with the program, covers the political assassinations of Robert Kennedy, President John Kennedy, Martin Luther King, political assassinations of the United States, and how they are related into a network in a total conspiracy. We used to call the program Dialogue Assassination. It was changed to Dialogue Conspiracy. And we're going to start right off with the death of LBJ. One of the saving things in our society was Mad Magazine always, because the generation growing up got some truth, at least some truth, from what was happening around the families and in their country. And Mad always has a version of what really should be said. And today I'll do an LBJ eulogy, what they're not saying on the Cronkite Show and the news media. From the time LBJ died, we got beautiful stories about his civil rights movement, what he did for the country. He was a great patriot, never a negative. They wouldn't dare tell the truth about the man for 1 minute. And right away, Ted Kennedy was the first person interviewed by the news media. It made the first column an interview by Ted Kennedy, somebody's funny joke. And he said about LBJ this week, in quotes, as president, his brilliant leadership on Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the Voting Rights Act of 1965 have earned him a place in the history of civil rights alongside Abraham Lincoln. And his efforts to help the poor, the sick, the oppressed stand out as landmarks of America's concern for those too weak to help themselves, end quote. That was Ted Kennedy. I'd like to make a few comments about that as a starter. The people that he's talking about are not too weak to help themselves. Most of the leaders were murdered or imprisoned. And when you begin to catch on to what the system is about, like Malcolm X, Medgar Evers, Martin Luther King, or Ruben Salazar, Jerry Lee LaMay, a list of several hundred blacks or Mexican-Americans, Chicanos, who were catching on to the system and were oppressed, these leaders were murdered and killed and are continuously being killed. There isn't anything weak about them. They understand the problem, and when they speak up, they're murdered. The Civil Rights Act that Lyndon Johnson is being praised about today would never have been passed unless John Kennedy was murdered. It was over the national guilt of John Kennedy and the surprise of his being murdered after such a short time in office that the Civil Rights Act was passed. And it didn't do a great deal. Just this week, at the time that Lyndon Johnson died, there was an article, the 23rd of January, Associated Press, on the despair of blacks in this country. The Harris poll shows the discrimination is worse now than ever. That was this Monday. There was an article from the New York Times on America's self-disgust and the death of Martin Luther King and the problems that have come since that particular time, which was during the Johnson administration, and when he said there was a lone assassin. That was just before he bowed out in April, a week before he said he wouldn't run again. Lyndon Johnson came in on the wings of sorrow, a national tragedy, and the work that he did isn't judged by the moment, by the one act or bill that's passed. Nothing has gone well for the minority since Robert Kennedy was killed, John Kennedy was killed. There's no spokesman in office, no candidate who can help the oppressed, who doesn't get ripped off or threatened with death threats all the time. Now, the TV eulogy showed Lyndon Johnson talking about Vietnam and asking the Congress to give him the power to escalate the war. But they don't read you from the Pentagon Papers. It was November the 24th, 1963, 2 days after John Kennedy was killed, that the war escalated full speed. No eulogy read the Pentagon Papers to tell you what really happened and how that war got where it finally did, with 45,000 Americans and maybe 6 million people in Asia murdered. That we don't hear about. We don't hear about Lyndon Johnson's friend, Brown and Root. Lady Bird owned some stock there, the largest builders in Vietnam of tiger cages. They build them in this country, too, in this state, in the prisons. They do the concrete work, the airstrips, the largest contractors in Vietnam. Texas firm from Houston, friends of Lyndon Johnson's, that made a big killing over the war. Lyndon Johnson, when they talk about his achievement, they don't talk about Air America or Vietnam or the importation of drugs, the escalation of drugs. And we don't hear about Air Force One and the plane that took him back. There are pictures of him in the paper this week, taking the oath of office with Jackie standing next to him when they took the body of John Kennedy back. And giving the oath of office was Johnson's friend, Sarah Hughes, the CIA judge, the judge from the Houston Foundation in Dallas, right from the CIA, administering the oath of office to Lyndon Johnson. They don't talk about the Kennedy family staying away forever from Washington, from the White House, the refusal to go to the White House for the Rose Garden dedication or having anything to do with the Lyndon Johnson family at all. They didn't talk about the Warren Commission. They don't tell you how one-sided it was. All of his old cronies were on the Warren Commission, Hale Boggs of Louisiana, John Cooper, Kentucky, and Richard Russell, Alan Dulles. These are the men, the anti-civil rights people, the warmongers, General Gerald Ford from Congress, the anti-Kennedy people, the pro-Cold War. It was made up of a team of people that represented the industrialists, the German cartels like Alan Dulles and John J. McCloy, the states, Richard Russell from Georgia, that made tremendous war contracts. That state survives on war contracts and racism. That one-sided Warren Commission was put together by Lyndon Johnson because he thought that his Texas cronies could investigate the death of Kennedy. But people all over the world were saying it was a conspiracy. They didn't believe the original cover story. So as people filed into the White House, into Washington, from all over the world for the funeral of John Kennedy, they were met by John J. McCloy and Alan Dulles, and they were told, don't talk about conspiracy in your country. And foreign aid was baited at them, and fears, you know, about disclosing any possible talk about a conspiracy. And then Lyndon Johnson took his Earl Warren into the office and made him cry. He didn't want to head the Warren Commission. They don't talk about that this week. The excuse for heading the Warren Commission, he told him, was that Soviet Union would have an attack against us and kill 60 million Americans. One lie compounded by another lie. That has to be the most feeble excuse for covering up a huge conspiracy that Lyndon Johnson knew about and played this dirty game of having a Warren Commission that didn't ever investigate what happened. The autopsy x-rays are locked up for 75 years. The coat of John Kennedy is locked up for 75 years. The excuse Lyndon Johnson gave was, we wouldn't want every little sewing circle to be meddling with this stuff. The world-famous pathologists can't get there. People like Dr. Halpern from New York, the findings have been challenged over and over again. The archives will stay locked up as long as you want them locked up, and they'll be opened when the people in America decide they want to know what happened to these political assassinations that affected our country. Lyndon Johnson, I accused him, j'accuse Lyndon Johnson and his whole team of covering up the killing of John Kennedy, of escalating the war, and Lyndon Johnson doesn't need a judge or a court to try him. He tried himself, he was convicted, and he was found guilty, and he was sentenced to Johnson Ranch, and he never left that ranch. He never left there, not just once or twice. He was never seen publicly. He couldn't walk the streets of America like Harry Truman. The man knew what he did, and I know what he did because I spent 9 years cross-filing it, and I know that a person cannot live with that in their conscience and go out in the world and face people. Even if the bulk of America doesn't know the actual information about these political assassinations that took place, Martin Luther King and the Robert Kennedy and also the John Kennedy, at the time Johnson was president, if people don't know the facts and details, the bulk of America knows something was wrong, and Lyndon Johnson knew a lot was wrong. And he announced that when he went to Texas, he was going to teach college down there. I knew he'd never teach college because he had such paranoia about being seen on the streets and being seen publicly. There was no way that man could meet publicly out on the streets and teach college to any of the students more than one day. He had a library, and he took down to Texas many, many documents that are classified top secret. He took with him the disappearing Walter Rostow. Rostow was the Henry Kissinger of the Johnson administration and behind the National Security Council escalation of the war. He's very silent these days. You haven't heard his name mentioned in the last couple of years. He's down in Austin doing their own version of rewriting, I'm sure, American history. But they can't do very much with the facts. The facts remain on the assassinations in the archives. And when you get those facts, then none of the others hold up. They all have to fall down by the wayside. This library down there was dedicated to Lyndon Johnson. It's a selective library. You see what he wants you to see, and locked up is what you can't see. And after the dedication, 1 year later, the building started falling down. The scaffolding and the fall. I once talked about on a previous radio show, I said the information in there is too heavy, the walls won't hold it. Now, Lyndon Johnson had his own fears and fantasies. People may realize, may not. He gave up his presidency. He didn't run for office in 68. But he had two Oval Offices down in Texas. One was above the bank and one was above the university, close to each other. And each one was furnished identically like the White House. So when he left the White House, he had his little fantasy. He still was president. He still was the White House. And everything in both offices was exactly alike, except that I understand that one door opened up to a barbecue outside where he had a barbecue. And it wasn't exactly the Washington White House, but the two offices in Austin next to each other on top of these buildings are decorated in identical fashion. And that tells you something about the man. He couldn't give up that position. And no matter where he was in either one of these two places, he still played his little game of president. He never enjoyed his past presidency. He couldn't enjoy the 10 to 17 million he's supposed to have made. He's invested a lot of money down in Mexico. Mexico is where the assassins, the school for assassins, trained. Oswald was down in Mexico. It connects to a lot of Texas officials. The Mexican government was involved in the Watergate affair, where the money from Houston, again, the Houston, Texas oil money, was washed to lose its traces down in Mexico. Lyndon Johnson had investments down in Mexico. He had a lot of money. He was never a free man. He was just surrounded by his memories, and I'm sure there are plays like MacBird, this taking the Shakespeare Macbeth. I don't know if any of you know the play by Barbara Garson. It came out, was played in 27 countries. And you might go to the library and ask for it and read it again now that LBJ is gone. It's called MacBird, and it's the hassle between Lyndon Johnson and Robert Kennedy for the throne of the king that was killed. Now, it's going to take a little while, a few more years, for a few truths to come out about the Cold War period. One of the defenses of the action in the Watergate was on Buckley's show the other night, a reference to Bernard Barker, that he was carrying out the National Security Council decision in Cuba at the time of the Bay of Pigs working, that our government had decided to overthrow Cuba and kill Castro. The National Security Council was behind many political assassinations. And that old gang, one by one, are leaving. And Truman's gone now, and Allen Dulles, and Atchison. And you have your links there, the OSS that became the CIA and the Nazi U.S. Links. And you have Henry Luce gone with his hatred of China and his paranoia about things in communism that affected the people in China, land reforms, getting rid of the crooks, providing food, education for all the people, in his paranoia and hatred of communism because they threw out God along with the ruling class. He had his war going. He's gone. Hill Boggs, the Warren Commission, is dead. Richard Russell is dead of the Warren Commission, and Lyndon Johnson is dead. Now, we have a few more to pass before the truths start gushing out. One of them is Earl Warren. He's still around. And Gerald Ford in Congress, Richard Nixon's closest buddy. Those two are alive, and people like to save face. They can't talk about these men while they're alive or speak the truth like I speak or even read it. They're afraid to talk about it. But the old Cold War gang is taking a new shape, a dangerous shape, but the old form is gone. And when the old form is gone, the archives someday are going to come tumbling down like the Johnson Library, and then you'll find out what the 50s and 60s were all about. And it'll take you back, like I've studied, into 1945 after World War I. None of the speeches about Lyndon Johnson talked about Bobby Baker and the deal that he made. He was supposed to have offered him $1 million to take the rap and shut up. The man who's prosecuting the Watergate for the government right now prosecuted Bobby Baker and Jimmy Hoffa. So you know that if he's going to hold out for G. Gordon Liddy and James McCord, they'll be out in 3 years, too. The men at the Watergate are allegedly, they were supposed to have been offered $1,000 each every month while they're in jail sitting there until they get out. And Bobby Baker was supposed to have gotten a deal from Lyndon Johnson. So the same man that prosecuted Hoffa and Bobby Baker is prosecuting the Watergate. That's why none of the important witnesses are being called to the Watergate affair. I jump from Johnson to the Watergate because there's a link going all the way from those years right up to the present time. These are the things that the news do not tell you about Lyndon Johnson. Now I'm going to two more subjects, and then we're going to do something new. Now, we've never done talk shows here on Dialogue Conspiracy. I've done them in San Francisco and Sacramento. A lot of them. We're going to take calls on 624-3859 and questions about the Watergate this week or the political assassinations. I just want to mention something which was shocking. If you've been following the Watergate story and listening to my program or read the article in The Realist, we talk about Howard Hunt, one of the men that was arrested at the time of the Watergate incident. He escaped arrest for a while, but then was covered and pleaded guilty. He was found 30 days later after five men were originally arrested. His wife was killed on an airplane crash in this last month, and she had with her $10,000 of defense money, CIA money, $100 bills, again, the CIA money, defense money that the men were going to use that she was delivering to Chicago. And this was December 8th. There was a plane crash in Chicago. Now, there was a spot news on the radio just about 2 weeks ago, just one news flash, and then a news blackout, and I take eight papers a day. And the news, the LA Times had an article this Friday, just this last Friday, that repeated what was heard just once in San Francisco on the 19th of January. And the article's the effect that the Cook County Coroner's Office in Chicago has said that 10 out of 55 victims of the two recent plane crashes in Chicago, the one that Mrs. Hunt was on and the one that followed a week later, died of cyanide poisoning, and that there were cyanide traces in the bloodstream of the pilot in the crash that Mrs. Hunt was on. And I wrote a letter to the National Transportation Safety Board. I called Washington and I called Chicago, and I said that I think the people in this country have a right to know if the United Airlines is being used to get rid of a witness of a conspiracy trial like the Watergate, because Mrs. Hunt had testified to the grand jury. And everything is locked up secret, and they may be wanting to use her later. And Mrs. Howard Hunt died on that plane crash in Chicago, December the 8th, carrying money of Howard Hunt. She had an insurance policy of $235,000, which was used for him to stay out. He's out on bail on her insurance money. But in this plane crash, 10 people died from cyanide poisoning, and the pilot had cyanide poisoning. And I had written to the aeronautics and asked them that not to cover up. We're tired of these conspiracies. First one person, then another, and then 45 people on an aeroplane. The air safety investigator, William Lamb, wrote back to me in January and said, I can assure you that this board and its staff in the investigation of the Midway accident will pursue every possibility in an effort to determine with certainty the probable cause of this accident. We believe the past efforts of the board to determine an accident causation in aviation accidents speak for themselves, and I assure you that this case will be handled no differently than any other. Signed by Mr. Pulse, their general counsel. Well, for the first time, they did a routine check on the victims and found cyanide poisoning in the pilot and 10 other people. So they said, this was in the Los Angeles Times, January the 19th, that from now on they will certainly look. We will routinely check victims from now on and see if they have cyanide poisoning. I think it's shocking that the pilot and 10 people has cyanide poisoning on that particular plane crash, and it didn't make the Associated Press, United Press. It was an exclusive just to the Los Angeles Times. It should have made some kind of headlines all over, telling us the circumstances of that particular plane crash. Everything has been silenced up since that crash took place. Another thing that was important about Howard Hunt's trial this week at the Watergate was that the information came out through Time magazine has an article this week that one of the excuses that James McCord used for going into the office, it seems, was that there was danger to President Nixon. And this was the allegation that I refer to all the time on this show, that Lewis Tackwood said that there were plans of the police state espionage group working out of Washington to kill Richard Nixon and blame the radicals. And Time magazine this week, if you buy Time magazine, has an article that fits in with the Lewis Tackwood allegations. He's the agent provocateur in Los Angeles that worked 9 years with the LA Police Department and quit there in the fall of 71 because he would not be part of this espionage team. Now, at the time, Time magazine says that at the time that James McCord was bugging the Watergate Hotel, he was telling Mr. Baldwin across the street, who was taking the conversations, that if you get anything, any threat to the president, tell us and we'll turn it over to the Secret Service. Now look how that would work. He would turn it over to the Secret Service. That means that if somebody were a provocateur or an actual Republican who appears to be a Democrat, he could go in those offices and talk about killing Richard Nixon. Then that would be picked up across the street at the Howard Johnson Hotel and given to James McCord, then who was in chief of security for Nixon's life in Miami. Then if Richard Nixon were killed, McCord would say, oh, I have tapes taken from the Democratic office planning to kill Richard Nixon. You see how the Lewis Tackwood allegations that they were going to kill Richard Nixon and blame it on the radical fits in every week with the new information coming in Time or Newsweek or the trial. Fits in with the Tackwood allegations because there was a man in the Democratic office who was a Republican, he was the Judas of the group, who left the tape on the door, who was having telephone conversations across the street at the Howard Johnson Hotel. And that phone that was directly connected over there could be used, you see, for conversations on killing Richard Nixon. And then they could play these tapes back and say, oh, McCord was being very patriotic. His defense this week was that he wanted to tell the jury that he was doing this to save Richard Nixon's life. And the judge threw it out. He said, I won't accept that as a defense at all. It doesn't make sense. I won't even let you tell it to the jury. He says, that's such nonsense. I wouldn't even believe that you were doing this to save Richard Nixon's life. But what they were doing, what Tackwood said was going to happen, is the only explanation of what was happening was that they had a listening device across the street and were prepared to take conversation regarding the killing of Richard Nixon. And then it would be in their hands. And when Richard Nixon was killed, they would be sure to turn it over to the FBI and the investigative agencies as part of their routine information. They had access to this telephone conversation. Now, this kind of a setup to hide who does the murders was done with Lee Harvey Oswald in New Orleans. When he came home from the service and worked for the federal government and was told, go down to Mexico and see if you can get a visa to Cuba, the one way to get entry into Cuba was to pretend that he was pro-Cuban or a Marxist, which he never was. So in New Orleans, he made a record with far right wing and a fellow named Ed Buckley, who works for Schick Razor and Gillette. These are the big sponsors of Richard Nixon and the Republican Party. And he made a record with this particular man, who is a co-worker in this espionage team, Ed Butler, on that he was a Marxist. And then when Oswald was killed, they played the record, and they could say, well, he's a Marxist. Now, there's a phone call. I'm going to stop now and take a phone call before we go on and see how this works and answer some questions.
Isn't that the shop for the TV?
What? No, we're on now. What's your question?
Me?
Yes?
I'll take this.
Okay.
Hello?
Yes.
Is it the shop for the TV?
Oh, no.
No?
No, we're on the radio. We're taking...
for the repair? No, I suppose it's a...
No, we'll get back on the air. We're back on the air. Maybe she is... No, this isn't the shop for the radio. This is the KLRB, and we're talking about Dialogue Conspiracy. And I'm going to take calls if you have any questions on the news of the week for the Watergate or on the political assassinations. I want to show you the similarities. Before she called, I was trying to show the similarities between the way you set up a patsy, like the Watergate espionage operation and the Dallas espionage operation, when they hired Lee Harvey Oswald to be a decoy in a building while the gunman left town and guaranteed him he would be safe. He was killed in the Dallas jail, and then they play all the records where he says, I'm a Marxist and I'm pro-Cuban, which he never was, but which was supposed to be his entree into Cuba if Castro had believed it, which Castro never did believe. Now, the important thing is tax season rolls around and you begin to think about where your money's going to come from and where it's going to go. Remember that the Watergate group are central intelligence agents right now. They were at the time they were arrested, and that your tax dollars are going to pay them all of the money, that $1,000 a month and more, if they sit and don't talk about what happened or who hired them. Now, it's very, very difficult to trace this kind of an operation because every method is used to hide the actual sources of contact. But Frank Martinez, who was arrested at the Watergate Hotel, had a diary in his car which mentioned that it was a CIA diary, and he was employed at the CIA diary at the time of his arrest. And he was not paid by the committee to reelect the president. He has been with the Central Intelligence Agency since the time of the Bay of Pigs. And after he was arrested, he was off the payroll of the Central Intelligence Agency. Another man, Frank Sturgis, getting back to Martinez, there was one important thing about Martinez, too. He had a cook's passport in his pocket to serve tables at Miami Beach. And I don't know if I mentioned it on Dialogue Conspiracy recently, how the cook at the Ambassador Hotel, Mr. Gindross, was a security risk who should never have been there at the time Robert Kennedy was killed. And the Secret Service had so much information on him that if a president had been there, the man would have been locked up. He was such a bad security risk. And Sirhan had the keys to his car. And Martinez, who was on the payroll of the CIA, traveling with aliases and passports, also was going to serve food or be a cook down at the time of the Miami conventions. Another man that was arrested at the Watergate Hotel, Frank Sturgis, had an alias by the name of Edward Hamilton. And this card was made out by the Central Intelligence Agency for Howard Hunt, who worked for them for 21 years. Now, the CIA takes away all passports and all cover identifications when an employee leaves that agency. So, therefore, Sturgis was another man besides Martinez, who was on the payroll of the CIA at the time of the Watergate affair. The Chicago Sun referred to the men that were arrested there as a band of hired killers, thieves, agent provocateurs, and dirty trick artists, hiding behind a layer of the CIA and used by the administration for their private political plots. Now, that's about as strong a statement that I've seen printed outside of the article that I did in The Realist about what's taking place. We're going to try another phone now and see if somebody wants a TV repair still. Okay.
Hello, Mabe.
Yeah.
Listen, if all what you say is true, now why aren't people in jail over what you say? I mean, why aren't you out for blood?
What do you mean, why aren't people? Assuming, say, that what I say...
Now, listen, if what you say is true, I'm sure that... Now, I'm a liberal. I'm more than a liberal.
Yeah.
And I think that some of what you say could possibly be true.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, why aren't people behind the jail? Why aren't you out for blood? Why don't you get names? I mean, you are really into this, right?
Yes.
Why don't you get the information and have these people arrested? Why don't you take it to the courts?
Well, I've taken it to a private attorney to take a citizen's risk against J. Edgar Hoover when he was around. Now, this is the problem. You say, take it to the courts. I take it to the people. That's you out there. And you people have to begin to have demonstrations to open up the National Archives. I've been trying to do this for years. Finally, the protests of the people in this country, all over the world, ended the Vietnam thing, not the administration. They would have gone for broke. They would have turned it into a parking lot. They didn't care at all about it. It was the people. Now the people have to, the Vietnam protests are over. Now you get your sticks and put signs on them and call in and listen to shows like this and spread the word. You take it to the people that if the political assassinations were not part of a conspiracy, then the National Archives should be open for everybody to see. Start with the coat of John Kennedy. Start with the X-rays. James Ray should have a trial. He's locked up there. He's begging for a trial. Everything is locked up about Martin Luther King. He says he didn't kill him. Sirhan is begging for another trial. He says if the truth would come out, it would shock the nation to its foundations. There's a second gun that was used that shot Robert Kennedy from behind the head. The evidence is overwhelming, but you cannot say, you cannot take it to Richard Nixon because he gained from all of this. You cannot take it from Mr. Kleindienst because he is appointed by Richard Nixon. You cannot take it to Patrick Gray. He has spent since 1960 working to get Richard Nixon into power. It's a total political job, and the FBI doesn't want him the head of the FBI. That you could write a letter to congressmen and say, get Patrick Gray out. Just on the Watergate investigation alone. But what you've got to do is to say, if 0.1% of what I say is true, open the archives and begin to write letters to congressmen. You and everyone listening to me could write 10 letters a week to various members of the Congress. I write 30 letters a week to different officials, like this airplane, the investigation. I make long-distance calls. I write to members of Congress about a lot of things. I write letters on the appointment of Justice Clark that Ronald Reagan wants, who's going to affect many people's lives. You know, last week I asked on the program that people write to the state Supreme Court and investigate this appointment because it's so terribly important to many people who are in prison, who gets on that Supreme Court now. And just this week there was an article that the appointment of Mr. Clark is being investigated, and it said 2 years ago it was so routine. Now I'm reading from the Chronicle. It says 2 years ago it was so routine. Why all the fuss now? Because now we're flooded with letters about the governor's nomination. Now this is the point. People are finally catching on that when Ronald Reagan appoints somebody, that a whole team finally is going into every decision he made down in San Luis Obispo. And 2 years ago he was appointed to a court. They didn't get one letter, but this is 2 years later, and we know our lives are involved. A lot of innocent people are involved. Fashion is involved. So just last week, on last week's program, I said, write letters about the appointment of this Mr. Clark. And one of the people who's listened to my very first radio shows, every show, all the time, said, you gave them too many letters to write. I don't give enough homework, because 3 days later, they were inundated with letters for the first time, because the system will break down and truth will come out when you begin to ask. So the point is, if what I'm saying is true, if it affects you, you can write 10 letters isn't too much in 1 week or 5 a week just to Congress. Open up these assassinations. Follow the Watergate through. Let Arthur Brammer have a trial. Let's find out who killed Martin Luther King. Word it any way you want, but write 5 letters a week, and I guarantee you we would get action, and then some truths would come out.
Yes, but see, can't you take now specific information to a district attorney?
Yeah, like Jim Garrison.
And get some reaction from the courts if there's any feasible it was believable at all.
Did you read the article I did in The Realist?
I haven't read The Realist yet.
Oh, well, the Thunderbird bookstore has them down here in Carmel and Santa Cruz. There's a bookstore that has them up there. On the back of the article is a thing about how Jim Garrison, a district attorney in New Orleans, wanted to find out the truth about John Kennedy's assassination, and a man was hired by our Justice Department, three agents, to plant evidence against Jim Garrison. His name is Pershing Gervais, and he was given $18,000 to live in Canada, $18,000 a year, funneled through General Motors to plant evidence to make Garrison look guilty. You see, the Justice Department...
In other words, the courts are covering up for
the courts are... they're so corrupt. John Mitchell, as the Attorney General, had a slush fund of $900,000. It's just come out since the Watergate thing, of espionage money. The source coming in is never recorded. Where it goes is never recorded. And then you have men like Arthur Brammer shooting Wallace, staying at the Waldorf Astoria, flying all over the country, spending a fortune. James Ray spending $10,000 to $20,000. Oswald living off money. The point is this: as soon as people begin to get angry about these political assassinations and ask the elected officials, not the persons who gained by the murder. See, the men in Congress didn't gain by these assassinations, so they have nothing to lose to open the truth. You follow? So you ask your members. President Nixon gained by it, and Patrick.
In other words.
What?
A group behind the scenes that is running the country.
That's right. But they only get their purse strings from Congress.
Well, listen, you think the courts are corrupt then in covering up a lot of these assassinations, correct?
Well, of course they're corrupt. I can talk. I don't have to go back to the early ones. Take the water.
Something. Why did they let Angela Davis off the way they did? And why this Billy Smith out at Fort Ord?
Well,
he got off on a lot of pretty heavy charges, too.
Well, I could name 30 cases in California right now, men that are up in San Quentin right now that would be off free if they could have the same legal aid that these men had. Those are planted. These people are in jail that are innocent. Angela Davis had a lot of money and support behind her, and Billy Smith did, too. It costs $100,000. Gary wants...
strict military courts. I mean, they could have hung him without saying a word.
Yeah, but see, the juries aren't stupid anymore. If you get a fair jury, people are beginning to understand how the system is working. For the first time, people are beginning to understand. So if you get action and demand some of these truths to come out, you can't fool all of the jury. Even that woman on the Juan Corona thing tells how she was intimidated and told by the woman, you know, what to do and how to vote. And he'll probably get a new trial. Now, it's expensive and it's time-consuming, but this is the first time in history where people, if they got their heads together, could combat the whole situation.
Well, I mean, right now they're hanging, you know, the Watergate people. The judge is hanging them right and left.
The judge isn't hanging anybody at the Watergate. Let me explain to you about the Watergate. There were a team of 20 espionage people involved. In the White House, and John Mitchell and Marie Stans, there were four men registered at the hotel with them, one from Kansas, one from New York. They weren't even arrested. And Mrs. Mitchell was out in California with those people with her daughter, and she said, why wasn't the man, Steve King, arrested, who threw me through a window? And she said, politics is cops and robbers. They're not even using her for a witness. They're all getting off. All you're getting is seven men. Because it's a Central Intelligence Agency operation, there's what they call a cutoff. And you never take the guys above that cutoff. And those seven men will go to jail and make a fortune, adding up to millions of dollars.
Being paid off.
Being paid up. Seven. There should be 20 there. There was an espionage team, top team of 20. And Donald Segretti, one of the men in California who spoke about the espionage team and met Howard Hunt in Miami to plan riots, Segretti isn't even called as a witness in the prosecution. He's not even being used. And he said he's one of 50 agents paid by the Treasury Department to sabotage the Democratic Party. And he's not even being used. So if you watch the Watergate trial and you begin to save articles every day, it's been going on the month of January, go to the library and copy the last ones and save them from now on. And then you'll see how the Warren Commission worked. They may call 60 witnesses here, but they're calling 60 people that had nothing to do with the case. They're calling. They're not calling Martha Mitchell. They're not calling John Mitchell. They're not calling Mr. Sloan or Liddy's arrested. They're not calling the people who funded all of this operation, don't you see? hundreds of thousands of dollars went into this, and they not only took the tapes from over across the street to Howard Johnson, but they delivered them to the White House to Mr. Timmons. Now, Timmons has been promoted to the chief liaison between the White House and Congress. He's not locked up. He's promoted. So you don't take it to that team for mercy. You just get yourself educated and write to Congress, because there is going to be an investigation. Sam Ervin.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of things that are hard to prove against people like that. I mean, they have their own little circles of power around them.
Well, it's hard to prove, but the point is, if you get the evidence out, let people come to their own conclusions, some of it at least.
Yeah, but, I mean, evidence like that is hard to bring out in the courts in a logical way that you can fight it a million...
Well, it isn't hard to bring John Mitchell and have him say under oath that James McCord didn't work in his apartment at the Watergate Hotel. That's not very complicated. James McCord was paid. The people in Washington...
He's not in himself either, because he has to keep himself clean.
Not if he's involved. If he is...
Well, that's all the more reason why he would want to cover up.
Well, yeah, but the point is, you're saying it's a complete investigation. Now you're saying he wants to cover up. Why does he have a right to cover up? If he's funding money for...
That's just the basic law of nature, I mean, for each individual.
What, the right to cover up?
Well, I mean, you know, anybody that does has a crime, if you smoke marijuana or something, you're not going to go to the police station and tell them that.
That's right, but if you're arrested on the marijuana charge, you're going to have to either prove your guilt or innocence or take the penalty.
Right, and if you're called the lid, you're still going to try and tell, you know, the judge that it wasn't yours, you know, you just found it or something.
Yeah, but you can go in there, you go to court, and the judge can either believe you or disbelieve you, right?
Right.
Okay, but Mitchell doesn't go to court to even make up his story. He's not even goes to court.
Well, I know. Okay. Well, if you were caught with a lid and the officer said, well, you have your choice, do you want to go to court or not go to court, you wouldn't want to go to court.
Okay, I'm going to take one more call now.
Okay.
Hello.
Hello, May.
Yeah.
I just want to say that I think you have a great deal of courage to be doing the work you're doing. And thank you for it.
Okay, will you write some letters?
Sure.
Write Sam Ervin, Senator Sam Ervin, and tell him when his congressional committee gets going, he has subpoena power for John Mitchell and Martha Mitchell. And we want to know who was in the room with Martha Mitchell. Herbert Kalmbach, Nixon's attorney, took her to the hospital for surgery because John wasn't in that room for 24 hours. And we have a right to know what five men from the Nixon team were with her, because they went right back to Washington and destroyed all the records in the office, and write to Sam Ervin and say, we want full TV public hearings. The nation has a right to know how the Democratic Party and the Democratic system is sabotaged.
Okay.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay.
Okay, well, it's just about time. It's 6 o'clock, and I do want to say that this is a very important moment in history, and you have to be involved and write letters. You can write to Mr. Wright. The appointment of the Justice of the Supreme Court is terribly important. Write to Donald Wright. He's the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court in California, and say we want to know the former decisions of the appointment of Ronald Reagan. We want to know where his head was at. You can write to Sam Ervin and get information on the Watergate. This week there was an article, it was funny with all the news coming in so fast and heavy, there was an article by Aline Mosby from the UPI on Oswald's job at the Minsk radio factory recalled. I'm going to write a book, I've done a lot of research about Oswald at the radio factory in Minsk. Aline Mosby was another American CIA correspondent who worked with Oswald in the Soviet Union. And she talks about his job. It was really apropos of not very much, and she refers to him as Lee Harvey Oswald, accused of assassinating President Kennedy. He's no longer the assassin. It's 9 years. History moves fast for some of us, slow for others. For me, 9 years just seems like yesterday. I've been working at this a long time. And these little words may not mean much to you who have not followed it so closely, but Oswald was always referred to as the assassin of President John Kennedy. And Aline Mosby, who worked with Lee Harvey Oswald in the Soviet Union as a correspondent and then did a cover story later after he was murdered, turning the whole story around that she did originally, refers to him 9 years later as being accused of assassinating President Kennedy. So slowly, history will turn itself around. I had written to the Soviet embassy about the Minsk Radio Factory because I thought Mr. Zeigert was a Nazi from Argentina that Oswald worked with and was suspicious of the Galen operation. It was the only non-Nazi that Oswald knew, and he was a German from Argentina that headed the Radio Factory where Lee Harvey Oswald worked. But we're running out of time. We can't go into that. Save your articles on the Watergate this week until we meet again, because if you follow that trial, then you can understand how the Warren Commission worked. Okay, until we meet again next week, that's it. Dialogue Conspiracy.